All right. Well, welcome everyone to Investing for Generational Wealth. Let's dive into the world of expert financial insights and strategies. And again, before we begin, just like any other time, quick disclaimer, we're not financial advisors. Our investments are subject to risk, including possible loss of your money to invest. So perform your due diligence before making a financial decision. Of course, consult your CPA and your attorney before making any investments. I'm your host today, John Lai, and I'm joined by my co-host, Keshav, whom I'm interviewing. And welcome to today's episode, From Zero to 900 Plus Apartments, 500 Plus Homes, in more, just a little over 2 years. So today's guest is Keshav. Keshav, as you know, came from Amazon. He was an engineer at Amazon, now at Meta. He's the principal founder of Clive Capital. He has been specializing in delivering exceptional risk-adjusted returns through investments in real estate, energy, and you can talk a little bit about that, private debt, and more. And he has a passion, just like myself, for wealth creation and retailer solutions for both novice and seasoned investors alike. Before I go any further, Keshav, do you want to talk a little bit more about your journey through both real estate and then outside of real estate in investing?
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for having me on, John. Glad to speak on our podcast about my journey and hopefully people listening here and also, you know, later on can resonate a little. My background is software engineering, graduated out of college 2019. And at the time, my idea was to start a robotics company because I thought that's how I wanted to make an impact on the world. And robotics had always interested me. Then I learned that to get into robotics, you needed to go back to school. And I was like, I'm good after undergrad. And at that point, I pivoted and I, you know, I was like, okay, if it's not robotics, how else can I make an impact? And investing had always interested me. I watched my parents trade a lot of stocks. When I was a kid, like the Bloomberg channel was up. I remember seeing the S&P and the NASDAQ, like I think the NASDAQ was at like 3,000 back then, maybe. Low, right? Like the Dow Jones was like below 9,000. Like these are things that I remember. And I was like, oh, this is just really interesting, you know, the financial markets. And like a lot of people in the crowd read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I didn't really pick up syndications from the book. Maybe I should have, but that got me started in real estate in general, at least. And so with that, I was like, okay, I'm going to go buy single family homes. And that's how I got started as a realtor in Detroit, Michigan. So there, I was working at a car company at the time as a software engineer right out of college in 2019. Got licensed as a realtor leap day of 2020. So February 29th, almost 4 years ago now. Then, as you all remember, the pandemic hits, lockdowns happen. Almost 2 weeks later, markets close, like real estate markets. They open back up later that summer and I sold a few homes. And then I started looking at homes to buy, like to rent out and start investing in real estate. And then I'm just reading about everything on like Reddit and BiggerPockets and all this stuff about how, you know, property management's difficult and like the 1% rule, all of these things that are relevant to the world of single family home investing. Luckily, before I got too down the path, one of my good friends, his dad had been investing in syndications. So I was lucky enough that he's one of my good college friends. And so he came across a Reddit thread where someone was talking about buying up apartment buildings. And this guy on Reddit was talking about this in the real estate, you know, thread or subreddit. I'm not an avid Redditor, so whatever the terminology is. But I thought to myself, hey, investing in apartment buildings sounds a lot cooler than just investing in single family homes, like one at a time. Because this guy had bought 40 single family homes at his peak, and he said apartment buildings was way easier to, you know, like as an investment, as far as the returns that you get and the time put in. At that point, it's September of 2020, you know, this guy's telling me I can passively invest into apartment buildings, earn superior risk-adjusted returns compared to the stock market. Me coming from an engineering background, I'm skeptical, obviously, as we're all trained to be in the tech world and, you know, engineering in general. Like, why isn't everyone doing this if this is the greatest thing since sliced bread? So I took the next year actually to read books, watch YouTube videos, listen to podcasts, network with people. That's what I spent a lot of my lockdown doing. And I'm kind of glad in a sense that that's how that time is spent, because I was able to form virtual connections with people that I wouldn't have been able to otherwise. Because we were forced to be remote, I met people from all over the country, sometimes even the world, who were in this world of, private equity investments. But September of 2021, a year later, after I first heard about syndications and privately investing into apartment buildings rather than single family homes, I pulled the trigger and invested into 108 apartments in San Antonio, Texas. Started seeing the cash flow and the tax benefits, and the proof of concept hit for me, where I was like, okay, this is working. If I'm going to do this for myself and build wealth, build cash flow, get these tax benefits, I might as well do it for my family and friends. There's no fun in being financially free by myself. So, founded my company, Clive Capital, in January of 2022, and John graciously joined us in August of 2022. And since then, we've helped investors allocate to, like the title says, over 900 apartments, apartment renovations. The specific strategy is called multifamily value add, 500 plus single family home constructions, specifically built to rent communities. And that is it for now, as far as how much I've helped other people allocate. And by myself, I've also invested into an oil and gas syndication that is expected to produce 10 million barrels of oil and 50 billion cubic feet of natural gas over the next 30 years. The same concept there, right? I'm going to put my money first, and then I'll bring my passive investors along for the ride. We're also looking at debt funds, small cap businesses, other investments, but my goal is to build a diversified portfolio for my investors outside of the stock market, where they can take advantage of superior risk-adjusted returns, like basically higher appreciation, cash flow, right? Your dividends in the stock market are usually 3 to 4%. I believe we want to do better than that if we're really chasing after that concept of passive income. And lastly, tax benefits. A lot of the folks on the call, John, myself, we're all from the tech world. And even if we're not, we're all doing well for ourselves if we're looking at investing. And if we're doing well for ourselves, that means we're paying a lot in taxes to the government. And that's one of the biggest roadblocks to building wealth, generational wealth. So anything we can legally do to reduce those taxes. But again, like John said, I'm not a CPA. He's not a CPA. So this is an advice. Anything we can do legally, we want to do. Yeah, I would say that's a good, pretty good intro. I think I blabbered on enough.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I forgot that you worked in Detroit. I would imagine, like, starting out as a realtor in Detroit must have been an interesting endeavor, right? Especially with the pandemic hitting, it's like a double whammy. But I'm sure there were a lot of, good opportunities in Detroit, even before the pandemic and shortly after as well.
Yeah, I think that was my first kind of stint into entrepreneurship. So it taught me a lot about things that you don't really face a lot of as an engineer. Like, it taught me about sales, taught me about marketing, right? Just things like that. And like a personal story, like probably the home that wasn't in the greatest condition that I showed was listed for, I don't even know, like 40 grand. But this was me doing anything I could to make some sales happen and just get the snowball going. But it was just like a car had run through the house, weeds everywhere, graffiti. You do see all kinds of things for sure.
Why does investing matter so much? So we're both W-2 employees, as you say, like working for tech companies. Why invest in general?
Yeah, great question. And a lot of people, we reach out to a lot of people to see how we can help them, right? And the reason we do so is because I wish someone had told me about this stuff earlier, or had told my parents, who instead of, you know, actively trading stocks, they could have invested into these private equity syndications. So, you know, these investments, for people who don't know, just a quick recap. Folks, anyone can really passively invest into these private equity opportunities, right? We're calling them syndications, where some of the people, limited partners, passive investors, don't have to be involved with the day-to-day of the investment, whether it's renovating apartment buildings, building single-family homes, drilling for oil. You don't have to be involved in any of that, right? I invested in drilling in oil in Wyoming. I've never been to Wyoming. And I don't know how to drill. So the limited partner, their sole responsibility is to fund the investment. Again, individual investors come in at around 50 grand, right? So accessible to more people than most people think, if that makes sense. Most people think investing in private equity is only for the top 1% or, you know, ultra high net worth people. You can get started for as little as $50,000. Jay, I see you raised your hand. If you want to come off mute and ask your question. Oh. Yeah, Jay, go ahead.
I wonder if people can't go off mute. I know we can, I can't seem to send messages to folks, so you might want to check the settings.
Okay, if that's something you could look into, John.
I can't seem to make changes. I think now that I made your host, now that I can make changes to.
We have something in the Q&A. Oh. Okay. Yeah. If you could just type in the Q&A. Sorry for the inconvenience. And so type your questions in the Q&A and we'll get to them in the order that they come in. Again, apologize for the inconvenience and appreciate your patience. But to get back to the question, so LPs, passive investors, are mostly like they are hands off with the investment. They can be a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, business owner, completely unrelated to the investment that they're making in this private equity investment offering. And they can still earn returns from the investment. Now, the people who are actually executing on the investment, making sure those apartments are getting renovated or that oil is being drilled for, they are known as the GP or the general partners. And they're the ones who need the actual experience to go out there and execute on the investment. And they're working on it day in and day out, while again, the passive investors just continue on with their day when they've made the investment. Again, if the toilet breaks, if a drill bit breaks out in the oil field, none of that is the investor's headache, right? And so if people have the opportunity to invest into all of these opportunities, right? Stock market gives you 10% compounded, 3 to 4% of that is like cash dividends, I think, and then not really that many tax benefits. If there's a way to build wealth faster, build your cash flow slash passive income, whatever you want to call it, faster, and reduce your taxes, in a risk-adjusted manner, right? Like only invest in things that you trust and have done your due diligence in, don't invest in scams, then why would you not do it, right? I think once you create that wealth for yourself, that freedom for yourself, think about who all that could be impacting. It's not just you that benefits from having X amount of dollars in the bank account or X amount of dollars coming in passively every year, right? You obviously you benefit because one, your financial situation has improved. But think about those around you, your spouse and your kids, right? Immediately. Those people, you can support them a lot better. What if you fall sick, right? What if you're unable to work anymore for some reason? What if your spouse falls sick? What if you need to take maternity leave, paternity leave, right? take care of your parents? Who's going to support your family during all of that, right? You improve your family situation, right? Give them a lot of better opportunities and create generational wealth. It's not just you, but your kids, your grandkids can take care of themselves off of the investments that you have made intelligently. In addition to that, once you've taken care of yourself and your family, then you can start even taking, like, you can start showing your friends how you did what you did, right? Then they can go start taking care of their families and loved ones. You can start extrapolating this to the broader community. And as more wealth is created, more people are able to achieve that freedom and that wealth for themselves. It improves their health, right? They can afford to eat healthier, have more time to exercise. It affects relationships. Finances are like one of the number one causes of divorces in this country, right? And once you are financially free, again, you can start impacting other people a lot more. You can open businesses that you would not have had the time to open if you were on a W-2 working for someone else's dream. You can donate to charities the money that you have made from whatever it is, investing in apartments, investing in oil. You can, you know, use that money for good, basically. So I would, like, at the end of the day, money is just a tool, but it's really important because it impacts everything else that is important. The people in your life, the people that you don't even know about that are, right? Like, again, charities, donating to people who are less fortunate than you, and your health, your relationships, like, what else matters? So when people typically think about investing, it's just dollar signs and whatever, like cocktails on the beach, fancy cars. It's more than that. So anytime you look at an investment opportunity or what your money is doing for you, instead of saying I'm earning 10% in the stock market, I might even recommend that you say, hey, I'm losing 10%. Because what could your money be doing otherwise? Could it be doing 20%? Could it be doing 30%? Right? I'm just saying, keep your options open, keep your mind open. Definitely verify what you're doing, who you're talking to, but don't assume that the setup that you have, financial setup, or legal setup, right, when it comes to trusts, holding companies, passing on inheritances, don't assume that it's the best, because I'm learning new things every day. John's learning new things every day with that goal of being, hey, this wealth can benefit me, but more importantly, it can also benefit those around me. So
we had a question that, thanks for that answer. That's great. That's the perspective that I subscribe to. I had been a long time, basically 401k, IRA investor, and it served me okay. And gradually increased, you know, I would say 5 to almost 8 to 9% over time. But seeing how these alternative investments perform in market in such a short amount of time is pretty eye-opening. So I'm glad that you helped me find that. We had a few questions come in. One, when you got started with your first multifamily in Texas, what were some due diligence items that you did? Can you share? And I know that Clive is coming out with a due diligence checklist. But do you want to quickly run through some of the items? And, you know, I think you've also hit on this in the past, but I think it is useful to reshare some of that information.
Of course. Yeah. Like John mentioned, we are coming out with some lead magnets, free educational materials, just to get people thinking about these investments. One of them is just a quick 5-minute read about why you should invest outside the stock market, goes into even the technical analysis of Sharpe ratios, goes into what ultra high net worth individuals are doing. Because real estate's a great asset. But again, as more people get into real estate, we're seeing returns decrease over time. So my goal, my mantra is always to stay one step ahead of the competition. And that means investing outside of real estate into some of these other asset classes like energy, like private debt that we mentioned. But in addition to that 2-pager, 5-minute quick read, we're also coming out with an ebook, probably like a 15-minute read, a longer version. And like John said, a due diligence checklist. So like I mentioned, and like our audience is mentioning here, Due diligence is important. So we're coming out with a checklist of 100 questions available to you within the next month. So keep an eye out for that on our website. But I would say some of the questions that you should be asking are, you can break them down to broader categories. One, why this asset class, right? If it's multifamily value add, why are we investing into apartment buildings right now? If it's single family home built to rent communities, why are we investing in single family home construction? Understand the asset class as a general sentiment, like why does it make sense in the current economic environment, global macro environment? Two, I would say questions about the sponsor slash the active partners, the people who are actively working on the investment every day. These people can make or break your investment. A plus operator slash active partner slash sponsor, these are all interchangeable terms, so I'm just going to use them interchangeably. A plus operator, active partner, sponsor can take a bad deal and do well with it. Like compared to the market, they can, dig it out from 6 feet under. On the other hand, a really bad operator can take what should be a slam home run deal, and completely screw it up. We are seeing some of that in the current market where 70% of these syndicators, people who are privately raising capital and doing these investments, like myself, 70% of them are new within the last 5 years. Due to regulatory changes, social media, coaching programs, there's a lot more out there now. But what that means that is that these people don't have as much experience. They haven't been through market cycles, and they've mostly gotten lucky because since 2013, 2015, things have mostly been on the up and up, right? The last big recession we had was the Great Financial Recession crisis. So a lot of people, like, they're just riding the market, 2019, 2020, especially during the COVID pandemic, 2020, 2021, 2022. Now you're seeing a lot of foreclosures, people, losing their shirts, things getting sent back to the bank. So one, right, just to recap, the asset class. Why does it make sense to invest in this specific asset class? Apartment buildings, homes, energy, whatever it is. Two, who are you investing with? And from there, I would say three, get specific, right? With, if it's real estate, get specific to the market, get specific to the property. Like, why does this property make sense? Why does this market make sense? Right. Beyond that, I don't want to go too into depth, but I think there's a lot of other interesting conversation topics that we can discuss also, but the checklist is coming out. But beyond that, I would say ask for their reporting, investor reporting. How well do they communicate, right? Do they only communicate good things to you, or do they have the guts to also tell you what things are bad, but then also tell you how they're going to fix those things? Are they on time with their tax returns, right? This time of year, Schedule K-1s, a good amount of people have to delay their tax returns until October, right? So if the firm has great systems in place, they'll get you their tax returns by April 15th. And I would say ask for references, right? Like if you're going and working with the realtor, if you're going to like a car mechanic, whoever you go work with, you're going to ask for references. So ask references from their past investors, ask references from lenders that they work with, ask references from insurance companies that they work with, from attorneys. Check out what their social proof is also, right? One of the big reasons that we host these podcasts is just to show people what we do. So if someone has a social media presence, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, their website, podcasts, webinars, it's a lot easier to be able to vet them and, gauge them, get a gut check. So.
Yeah, and I would add to that, like, if they have skin in the game, if they've invested themselves in the opportunity, we definitely do that. You heard Kishore talk about oil and gas, and he's doing it before offering that capability to our investors. So we want to be sure that we've vetted the opportunity beforehand. And if we haven't had the opportunity, we definitely have skin in the game when we invest in these opportunities as well. Another question that came in, and I think it could be even broader of a question, but the question is, what are the tax benefits with real estate investment? And then I was just saying, like, more broadly, like, what are tax benefits of real estate, but other investments as well?
Yeah. Real great question. And I'm going to add something to your previous comment, John, which is also in addition to how much the person you're investing with is putting in of their own capital, how much are their loved ones putting in? Does this person that you're investing with, do they trust the investment enough to have their parents invest into it? Do they trust their family, their friends, their CPA, their personal lawyer, their spouse, their children to invest into it as well? A lot of the investments that I put together, again, I have my family investing into them. I have my closest friends from high school and college investing into them right alongside me. So just goes to show that, hey, like, I believe in this much. So moving on to the question next regarding tax benefits. So real estate has great tax benefits that I'm sure we have a lot of us have heard of. And I would say energy has great tax benefits. And then in general, investing through syndications has great tax benefits. I'll cover these three little by little. So with real estate, if real estate produces what are called depreciation losses, because you buy a building, the IRS recognizes, hey, this building's going to lose value over time. So since it's a loss to you as the investors because it's losing value over time, we'll give you that upfront. This depreciation paper loss. It doesn't mean you lose money, just means you can show on paper that your building lost value, because it will over time, unless you put renovations into it. So those depreciation losses are typically anywhere between 30 to 60% of your investment. If you invest 100K, you can expect to get a depreciation loss of 30 to 60K. Now, how that works is, let's say you invest 100K and you get a 50K depreciation loss, right, in year one. Let's also say that that apartment building, that investment returned 10K to you in cash flow. Now, because you made 10K, but you lost 50K, you're still in the hole 40K at the end of year one. Now, move forward to next year, you're in the hole 40K going into the year. By the end of the year, let's say the building pays you another 10K. Now you're only in the hole 30K. So you can keep forwarding that year one depreciation loss until you use it all up. So let's say by the end of year five, you have earned 50K in income. Then your depreciation loss offsets that with 50K and depreciation losses. At that point, typically these syndications will sell. Anywhere between 3 to 5 years, you're out of this investment. When you sell, you have to pay what's called a depreciation recapture tax for the taxes that you delay paying on that 10K you were making every year. So you do have to pay taxes, but it's only 25%. And we get to take advantage of inflation, because instead of paying tax in year one, we're paying tax in year five on those dollars that we took depreciation recapture on. In addition to that, when you sell, you will obviously get capital gains tax benefits for holding the investment long time. So that is real estate. We have a question here. Does your initial investment of 50K reoccur over the time? No, investments in private equity, for the most part, are all upfront. Unless it's like an ongoing fund, which we won't get into today. But if you have an apartment building, we bought 666 apartments in Houston with our partners a few months ago for $110 million. We raised $34 million from investors for that opportunity, along with our partners. That $34 million has to be present all upfront so that we can close on the opportunity. There's no need to invest beyond the initial investment unless there's a need for additional capital. But typically, you don't have to reinvest into the investment if all goes well. Moving on, let me make sure I just answered all that. Yeah. So moving on to oil and gas, right? Or energy in general. What I've specifically invested in is oil and gas, so I can speak to that so far. I just got the tax return back for it that I have to file. Oh, the one caveat I would mention with the depreciation losses in real estate is that to take those losses against something besides that real estate income, if you want to take it against your W-2 income or other income that you have to be what's known as a real estate professional, meaning you have to be in the real estate industry full time as a realtor, as a developer. It's an IRS rule. You can look up what it means to be a real estate professional, designated status. If you or your spouse is not a real estate professional, you cannot use it to reduce your W-2 income. And so that's why a lot of times you'll see spouses, they will pick up a job as a property manager, like manage one of the rentals or be a realtor, so that they get this benefit of real estate professional status, so that when they invest jointly together, they can also reduce their income jointly together when they go to file taxes. Energy is a lot better than that because I don't know why it is. I'm guessing that, I mean, energy is very important to a country. Wars have been fought over energy. Energy policy, energy security is very important. But energy is so important that the depreciation losses you get from investing in an oil and gas drilling operation, for example, and there you're depreciating the equipment, right? The equipment has a useful life also. But there, you can deduct the depreciation losses against your taxable income. So I'm, again, not a CPA, but I should be reducing my taxes here, even though I'm a software engineer during the day because of my passive investment into oil and gas without having to qualify as a real estate professional. Now, in general, other businesses like small cap businesses, like if you bought into a construction company, manufacturing company, other companies in general have expenses that they have to pay out. And you, as a shareholder, like in that LLC, those expenses and tax benefits can directly pass to you because you're investing in the LLC. The reason you don't get the same benefits investing in the stock market is because stock market, like most of the companies, are C corps, I believe. They're structured as C corps, not LLCs. So the same tax benefits don't apply. Again, my understanding, not a CPA. But that's the reason for why, hey, some people might think, why don't I just invest in the Chevron stock rather than a private equity syndication that drills for oil and gas? That is why, because of that difference in taxation of the two entities.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I can't wait until the oil and gas opportunity comes back up because I definitely need to write off against my W-2, as I'm sure many in our audience is in the same case.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thanks for that answer. We have another question that came in. It's about private equity investment in hard money funds. If you want to explain a little bit about hard money. But they don't have time to manage buy properties. So he had to, the question had two parts. First part is most private equity funds only accept accredited investors. So you might want to define that. But do you accept accredited investors, or are we open to sophisticated non-accredited investors? And then second part is they're looking for investments in short-term maturities, less than 24 months, 2 years. Not sure if we have something like this.
Yes, great questions. So an accredited investor, for those listening who don't know, is someone who meets usually one of three requirements. This is another term that you can look up as well. There are a lot more ways to qualify, and I think the IRS was coming out with additional ways to qualify, like taking exams, et cetera. But the three primary ways to qualify is, one, you individually make over 200K that you can show on your last two tax returns. That has to be your taxable income. Two, you and your spouse combined have to make over 300K on your last two tax returns. Or three, your net worth, not including your primary residence, has to be over $1 million. If you meet one of those three requirements, you are known as an accredited investor. And this question is a great question because some of the times, like a decent amount of times, we'll say 25, 30% at least, opportunities are only available to accredited investors. The regulations are less strict because these are such high earners. And so it's just a lot easier to raise capital from them because one, they earn a lot more, and two, regulations are a little less loose. So anytime you see an investment on the internet, for the most part, it has to be, if it's like these types of syndications, it has to be a 506C. And those types of opportunities allow accredited investors only. But there are opportunities for non-accredited investors. A lot of people, friends, family, coworkers, I know are not accredited. And I personally don't think that's fair to only have accredited opportunities. So I make sure to have both. But I also have to hop on a call with you, and we have to learn a bit more about each other according to SEC rules, Securities Exchange Commissions. Once we learn a little bit more about each other, then we can talk about what it might look like to invest. If we don't talk, then I can't really show you anything because I'd like to play by the rules. I don't want to go to jail. So yes, if you're not accredited, you don't meet one of those three requirements, you have to form a relationship with someone who is putting these investments together so that you gain access to these opportunities. Lastly, investments with fewer than 24 months timelines. I mentioned that most of these syndications are usually 3 to 5 years, and you'll be told that time frame up front. Some opportunities are less than 24 months. We're looking at some opportunities right now where it's just 12 months for your capital to be locked up, right? And I think 12 months is great. And that's an opportunity that I'm going to continue to explore even more. So feel free to reach out if you want to learn more. Again, we'd love to establish that relationship with you, make sure we're a good fit before we discuss investment opportunities that we have. But in general, I try to have investment opportunities, private investment opportunities that fit all these categories, right? Tax benefits, cash flow, accredited investors, non-accredited investors, short-term investments, long-term investments, just a whole buffet, an investment wonderland.
That's great. Might as well address this now. How do you reach out? Do you talk a little bit about the different ways to contact you?
Yeah. I know people might have to hop off here, but the best way to contact me, if I can just type the answer here. So email, phone, or LinkedIn works best. So I'm going to throw my phone number in here, my email as well, and my LinkedIn. 1 second. I should have my LinkedIn URL just memorized at this point. I'm going to throw this in there. We send out three weekly newsletters to our folks to keep them educated, one of which is regarding these webinars. And that's our goal. It's not just to help people invest, it's to help educate them so that they know what they're investing into, why they're investing into it. 1 second.
You can always go to clivecap.com as well. That's the website for the company, clivecap.com, and find out more information, but you shall be dropping this information here shortly.
Yeah.
I also see a question around 1031 exchanges. Can limited partners use 1031 exchanges if an opportunity is sold?
1 second. I think the chat just worked. So,
and it's slightly different. Yes, I think it's probably under the answered. Let's see.
I just put it in the chat, actually.
The chat, okay.
Yeah, so I put it in the chat. It's in the Q&A answered section as well, but we'd love to chat with anyone, see how we can help.
Yep, this other question is about 1031 exchanges and opportunities for limited partners. I think that the answer depends on if it's for example, a single residence or a small complex versus the large syndication, right? I think it'll be much harder for a large syndication.
Yes. So
Do you
basically,
want to address that question?
yeah, there's two scenarios here I think our audience could be referring to. One is where you have a personal residence and you sell it because whatever, you want to be a little more passive. Your toilet just broke and that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Whatever it is, if you personally own that property wholly, then you can 1031 into real estate opportunities for sure. I'm not 100% sure about how 1031ing into other asset classes works. Would be interesting to know. But you can, but
And
that's
to
if you,
be,
yeah.
was going to say, to be clear, 1031 exchanges are primarily used for businesses. You can't use a 1031 for your personal residence. It's primarily for businesses.
Right. So you had to have rented that home out. Like it can't have been a personal residence to you. Now, I'm sure multifamily would still qualify if you lived in one of the units but rented the other ones out. You could 1031 out of that. And you can 1031 properties that you 100% own into these syndications, these private equity investments that I'm mentioning. Again, you bought a home in one of these high appreciation areas, the Bay Area, Seattle, New York, all these tech hubs, you did well for yourself. It is possible to 1031, as long as you rented that out or used it for business purpose, into these syndications that we're talking about. Once you get to the syndication level and you're asking about can the entire syndication 1031 into a new apartment building, that gets a little more hairy because, to my understanding, everyone has to agree to 1031 exchange into the next opportunity. If there's 100 investors, all 100 investors have to agree to 1031 into the next opportunity. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm sure there's, creative ways where shares can be bought out or something. We haven't really looked into this, but it is something that could be possible. But for most cases, it gets pretty hairy for 1031 exchanges and syndications.
So I had a question about oil. So, coming as a non-investor, when I think about oil, I think about all the pollution that is generated. Like, why invest in oil if there's that concern about the environment? And could you address that?
Yeah, sure thing. I think currently, leaving any political statements aside, the world is rapidly developing. You're seeing countries in like South America, in Africa, in Asia, like rapidly industrializing. People are being lifted out of poverty every day as these people, as the countries develop, their energy needs are going to grow. As their energy needs grow, then that means you need to produce more energy. And the rate at which renewables have been developed and are currently developing, right? Wind, solar, geothermal, all that good stuff, it's not enough to meet the demand that we are currently seeing. If it was, then you would just see oil prices decrease, natural gas prices decrease. But you have to take care of a bunch of things, right? Warming and heating buildings, fueling equipment, fueling vehicles, fueling cargo ships, planes, all of these things. Not to mention that manufacturing lines have to also be changed. People don't realize, I think, but a lot of products that we use day to day have components that are byproducts of oil and gas. A lot of plastics, for example, right? And as much as we would like to transition over, that transition is also difficult, right? You can't expect the entire world to go out there and buy Teslas, right? Like if we want to get cars off the road, for example, some people have to drive cars that are 10, 15, 20 years older because of financial concerns. And so when you consider all of these things, And currently, like OPEC, I believe, is cutting production to hold oil and gas prices where they are. And the US has become the number one exporter of oil and I believe even natural gas. We need it at the end of the day. So to survive, to keep the lights on, all these things going. So, and that's not to say that you can't invest in renewables, right? There's solar energy investments out there also. Again, wind farms. When we're looking into all of these things, and I'm sure that they'll have great tax benefits also. But oil and gas, I would say, is not going anywhere for the next at least like 10 years.
One question that I had before getting into the realm of real estate or just alternative investments in general is why not just invest in an ETF, right? Or some type of fund, mutual fund, rather than investing in a singular opportunity or investing in a fund of funds. Could you talk about that?
With ETFs, I already mentioned a few things, right? There's the tax benefits because of the way that companies are structured and taxed. Also, two, I mean, just from a returns perspective, these private investments make sense. And, you know, these returns that we're mentioning, we build a certain amount of downside protection into them. Returns don't mean anything unless you can quantify the risks, unless you can say, here's how we're mitigating the risks. And we make sure to do that, even when we're producing the investment returns that we're producing for our investors. Our mantra, as a lot of people's mantras are, is always to underpromise and overdeliver. And so, in addition to those two things, right, returns, tax benefits, I would say, when you're investing into an ETF, do you really know what you're investing into? Rhetorical question, right? That ETF is spread amongst so many companies. And we discussed this in the two pages that we're about to publish about why you should be investing outside the stock market. That ETF, that index fund consists of so many companies, right? Now, diversification is good. Don't get me wrong. But how is that to know? How would you know if that performance is all because of one company or five companies or 10 companies, while the remaining of them are really zombie companies that aren't producing much growth, that are kind of stagnating? I think that's a problem that you see a lot right now, especially stock market performance is heavily weighted towards big tech companies. And if, you know, Nvidia were to go down or like Meta were to go down, any of these high performing tech stocks, then the broader market would go down. So you don't really have an understanding of what you are investing in. You just know that, hey, I'm investing in these 500 stocks. They're weighted by market cap. Here's their historical performance, whatever it is. You don't get an insight into how the business works. You don't get an insight into how Meta works, how ad revenue is collected. You don't get an insight into how Nvidia works, how the chips are made, how Tesla works, and how the cars are made. In the private syndication opportunity space, you can invest into funds, but most people, when they start out, invest into opportunities one at a time. So if I was to bring you a like 200 or 300 apartment building, you know that you are investing in that exact apartment building. You know where it's located, you know its financials, you know where the risks are, you know where the reward is. Because it's a single investment, it's a lot easier to nail down the fundamentals for it than it is for an entire ETF or an entire index fund. And I would also say that the syndication space, these private equity investments, you're able to understand them a lot better, right? In addition to what I mentioned, right? You can't call up Zuckerberg, you can't call up Warren Buffett and say, hey, or not Warren Buffett, but you know, like, Sundar Pichai of Google. You can't say, hey, why is my Google stock not doing well? Right. Or you can't say, hey, why is it doing well? But when you're investing in these small opportunities, you have a much greater level of transparency into the operations of the investment, into the whys and hows of how the investment is performing, and all of that good stuff. Beyond that, I would also say, in my mind, it's more of a level playing field. The stock market, in my mind, is not a level playing field. I don't think everyone gets information at the same time. about market updates, right? Things like that. You can't do insider trading. In private equity syndications, like you're on a much more level footing. There's no such thing as insider trading or anything like that. You know, it's a lot more difficult to get the, or your returns at least wouldn't be as crazy. So I think you can see that like a lot of institutions out there, like hedge funds, for example, quant firms, they have like fiber cables running to make nanosecond trades to profit in the stock market. How are you going to compete with that as a ETF investor, as a retail stock market investor?
Yeah, that's crazy. We have about 6 minutes left. If anyone has any questions for Keshav, and let me know or drop it into the Q&A. Keshav, how do you give back, or how does Clive give back?
At the moment, I think it's really educating people on these opportunities. A personal interest of mine is in housing, specifically like providing affordable housing. That is definitely a way I'm looking to give back in the future. I know people might sneer at that sentiment, but it's kind of hard to juggle a W-2 with raising capital and managing the construction of single family homes. But that's the idea. Right now, just help more people learn about these opportunities. In the future, I would say just broader financial education. Like one of the things that we're going to be doing at the Built to Rent single family home rental communities that we're building is offering these classes on financial education and educating the people, our residents, about budgeting techniques, about investing techniques, how to increase their income, things like that. So just a few ways that come to top of mind.
Great. Well, if there are no more questions, I wanted to thank you very much for the conversation today, Keshav, as always. To learn more about Clive Capital and what Clive is doing, feel free to reach out to Keshav. He dropped his information in chat. You can reach him at his email, keshav@clivecap.com. To find out more information, go to clivecap.com to just find out more information. There's a lot of great resources on the website, resources, a lot of which Keshav covered today, and we'll be coming out with more resources in the near future. Again, thank you for all the great information you dropped today, Keshav, and taking your time out of your busy schedule to speak to our audience. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel or podcast, whatever platform you're listening to today, to make sure that we continue bringing you the best educational content. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, keep learning to invest for generational wealth. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.